Well, good evening, everyone. I'll call the meeting to order. We have a quorum. I begin by acknowledging the Kaurna people, the traditional custodians of this land. We pay our respects to their elders past and present. Start off with a couple of announcements, which is a bit unusual, but I would like to especially welcome Andrew Doe, who's one of our gap year students, and he's actually volunteered to sit through a whole council meeting to see what we do. So, great. Welcome, Andrew. And I could add that Andrew was winner of the Mayor's Award, the coveted Mayor's Award, at his high school graduation last year. More applause on the way for the hot public event organised by our environmental health policy sort of team. We won this heavy cylinder of glass. An enormous amount of energy went into producing this. So I thought, rather than have it in the mayor's bookshelf with all of the Smart City Awards from through the years and the Business Excellence Awards, this Excellence in Public Health Award should be delivered to the desk of the staff who were primarily organising it, and given to her team, I think. And can that be please noted in the minutes if there's no objection? Leave is granted. And the other one is from the Minister for Health and Wellbeing. There's that wellbeing word again. And we were the joint winner with Onkaparinga of the Resilient South project. So I think that sort of goes to the same place. So well done, team. That concludes the announcements. I should also mention that we record the audio of this General Council meeting, and it'll be made available on the City of Marion website, the new website. I ask any elected members if they foresee a conflict of interest with any item on the agenda. Yes, Councillor Byrom.
Question, just with the cap for the confidential item, do I have a conflict with that? That's my question.
Members of the cap. Well, I don't think we have a planning proposal before us in that segment. It's more of an in-principle discussion. So Ms. McKenzie's nodding that there's not really an issue there. Councillor Gard.
Mainly, Your Worship, in consideration of the record, I know that my street does get a mention somewhere in the belly of the treescaping, and it's already a done deal, but just for the record, it's there. I don't think there'll be discussion about it, because as I say, it's history. It's already programmed, but I'm prepared to take any advice on that.
Ms. McKenzie, how should that be recorded?
Through the chair, we can record it as a perceived conflict of interest and still record how you vote for on that item.
Perfect. All right. Can I have someone move on block the confirmation of the minutes for the last General Council meeting and the minutes of the Special General Council meeting? Moved Councillor Byrom, seconded Councillor Crossland. All those in favour? It's carried unanimously. Thank you. Committee minutes, not so much recommendations, but on page 24, coming from the Infrastructure and Strategy Committee, and bearing in mind that's not the one we just had, but the 3rd of April minutes. Someone like to move? Councillor Pryor moved and seconded Councillor Gard. All those in favour? Thank you. Most outstanding thing was probably the news about the use of the Oaklands recycled water. That's really a great project for Council. And now we go on to a confidential item. So apart from a few named people, I'll have to ask people at the back of the room, in the gallery, to clear the area. So please relax in the foyer or committee room for a short while. It's hard to remember. It might be 10, might be 30 minutes, but yep. We'll resume normal programming after this item. So on page 32, councillors, would somebody like to move an appropriate confidential motion? Councillor Byram, seconded Councillor Gard. All those in favour? All those against? It's carried unanimously. Thank you. All right. Thanks for drawing that to my attention. We'll have to have the vote again because you are required to vote. Well, you need to make yourself clearly known to the chair. Well, actually, everyone had their hand up. That was the problem. You're not shy of calling out Mr. Mayor when you want to. What was your question, Councillor Hull?
Well, essentially, on what grounds is the matter deemed to be confidential?
As I understand it, there's commercial information of a corporate body, and it needs to be kept. It's quite obviously, I would have thought, commercial in confidence information.
But eventually it'll go to a tender process anyway, but why is it confidential now?
Clearly that body would be entitled to keep their significant commercial proposals to themselves and partner bodies like us until such time as it needs to be released publicly. So look, I don't think there's any, unless staff have any further information, I think we just go to the vote. All right, we'll vote again. All those in favour? All those against? Carried by majority. Thank you for clarifying that. Division is called on the confidentiality motion. All those in favour, please stand. Councillors Pfeiffer, Pryor, Westwood, Velescu, Appleby, Gard and Crossland and Byram. Save the best till last. And thank you, you may sit. And those against, Councillors Kerry and Hull. So, that is indeed. And now we're on to page 33. Public submissions on the draft annual business. Oh, well, there are none. Fine. Okay. Must be. Please, Mr. Salmon. Thanks. We know. Now, we're discussing the draft annual business plan, and this is the moment when members of the public are welcome to address council on what we've put out for consultation. Is there anyone in the gallery, staff excluded, who would like to address us on the draft annual business plan? Last call. All right. Well, there being none, I'd invite someone just to move the motion as recommended, and it comes back to the next meeting anyway. Councillor Crossland so moved, Councillor Byram seconded. Any discussion? No? All those in favour, raise your hand. Oh, sorry, there's a question. Councillor Hull. Would Ms. Dixon like to answer that?
Through the chair, it has been extended by a week in response to a member of the public wanting some more time.
Any other discussion? I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. So, straight to page 64, the HIPAA program. Anyone like to move? Councillor Byram.
Thank you, Your Worship. I would like to move the motion to extend the time for the HIPAA program.
To 30th of September.
Yes, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, please go ahead and speak if you wish.
Yes, several people have spoken to me in the community about this program, and they do like the program. They would like to see it continued. Excuse me. And they also would like to have the chance to make suggestions. Sorry. for the program for the future. Thank you.
Did you wish to go on? Can you go on?
Yes, so a lot of people were still wanting to put input into this program as to how we could look at it for the future and improve it, but they wanted to, because people were slow on the uptake at the beginning, they did want to see it continue longer.
Thank you. Is that seconded? Councillor Westwood?
I do second it, but I would like to ask a quick question, and that is, why is it costing so much for 3 months? What exactly do we get for that to staff, please?
Be Mr. Lyons, would it? No? Sorry, Mr. Scull.
Through you, Chair, and I may need to ask a confirmation from Ms. Reid at the back, but there's no extra cost to extend from June to September.
So there would be
some cost in staff time that we would wear, but I just need to confirm that. Rachel, is there a...
Okay, anyway, I do second the motion. I think it sounded like a very good program to me in the very beginning. I'm rather disappointed that it hasn't been more uptake, and I hope that there is. I hope more people take the opportunity to participate if they can. I'm actually surprised that more people haven't fronted up for it. Thank you.
Anyone speaking against? Councillor Hull?
Mr. Mayor, when this matter was first discussed, I remember there was great discussion around the means testing and because this is designed for people that might be struggling a bit, that might not be able to afford to pay for driving lessons. I'm just wondering how that aspect of it's going, because I remember there was a great interest in that particular angle to the program. Is there any advice on that as to how we are assessing candidates' suitability? Because...
Yeah, Mr. Scull? Or Ms. Reid is going to come forward and help you with that answer. Thank you.
Through the Chair, they're not specifically means tested. It's more around whether or not they do have support to enable them to undertake those driving lessons. It's not means tested as such.
Entry, Mr. Mayor. I'm sure most ratepayers would expect that we're not in the driving school business, that there is some purpose for this, and we were assured that there would be some form of means testing to make sure that, you know, it doesn't come to light some millionaire's daughter is actually getting a free driving lesson, compliments the City of Marion. I'd like to assure the people of Marion that is not the case. So that's the direction of my question. Can you assure me that a millionaire's daughter is not got a natural right to have access to these driving lessons, compliments to ratepayers?
Through the Chair, I think what I would like to be able to do is go back to HIPAA and have further conversations to actually give us that guarantee. I'm not 100% confident to sit here and actually say that I can't guarantee that that won't happen.
Councillor Hull, anything further?
Well, we did actually ask this question right at the beginning. I'm sure a number of us had concerns.
So take this as your contribution in the debate.
Well, it could be.
Yeah, well, go ahead.
It could be. and it essentially, I don't mind giving things a fair go, and this has been an opportunity to prove the benefit of it, but that inherent question that members had back then when it was first proposed, some of us are a bit like that about it, but we've actually got to this point and we haven't really nailed it. We haven't really, you know, like, I think if anybody in the community asked me about this, I'd like to say with some conviction that you're not actually paying for a millionaire's daughter to do a driving lesson.
Councillor Hull, from that report, the simple answer seems to be that more people have been knocked back than been allowed onto the program.
To know why they've been knocked back, Mr. Mayor, that's the thing. Like,
yeah, okay.
Is it because they're means tested? But it's not because they're means tested.
Well, that might be one of those questions that has to be taken on notice.
Is it because they are under the influence?
Oh, Mr. Skull can answer it. So here we go.
Through the chair, the HIPAA selection process was pretty thorough. So I think Ms. Reid is right to say that we can't put a hand on our heart to say that a millionaire's daughter has come forward and said, "I have nobody with whom I can drive." They've never had a professional driver's license. So it could have slipped through the cracks. But I'm pretty confident to say that the hyper-selection process was aimed at people who had no other way of getting the 75 hours driving with an instructor that they could do with somebody from their family or friend that they could use. So there are three reasons why the people were knocked back. Access to people with whom they can drive, so they have no family members or friends or anyone with a license who could, or a car who could help them. Not having the means to have a professional, pay for a professional lesson. And the other one is that we had applicants from outside the city of Marion, and this was aimed at younger people without a license who lived in the city of Marion, who otherwise would have a difficulty getting a license. So I'm pretty comfortable to say that the hyper-selection process was thorough and didn't advantage people who otherwise would have been able to get their licence.
Councillor Hull. Thank you. Councillor, anyone else speaking in favour of the motion, which is to continue this program for the 30th of September? Question, Councillor Gard.
Just regarding the option one, if we were to vote option one, that the program continued to the 30th of September, what are we then voting for? Is that it? Is that the implication of that option? And the second part of the question is, are the people that are still active in the program, we see there are two active and one has gained provisional licence, are they affected by which way we vote?
Mr. Scott.
Through your worship, I can answer that. If you chose to end it in June, that they would go on to the Adelaide City Council area-based HIPAA program, so those people in the program wouldn't be left in the lurch. If we extend until the end of September, then there'd be another decision point there to continue or not, based on numbers, which we're hoping through the marketing efforts we're putting in that would increase, but that hasn't borne fruit just yet.
Councillor Byrom to close the debate.
Thank you, Worship. Yes, I do want to see this continue because it's not just those two there that are active. As we said, there is an alternative for them, but it's the people who are not yet on the program. And there's some of the care organisations out there who were talking about it was slow in the beginning in getting started, but they've got people now who are looking at getting into the program and they wanted to still be able to do that under this program. So I do want to see it continue until September.
All those in favour, please raise your hand. All those against, the motion fails. So I would be well, does anyone want to move the other alternative motion that's printed, which is to finish in June? Otherwise, I'll just check with staff what happens if there is no motion arising from tonight. Ms. Reid.
Through the continue until the end.
So then there seem to be two alternatives before council. Do nothing and a report will come back in a month or two about whether it goes kicks on for another session. Or somebody may want to move a motion to have it stop in June this year. So I think they're the two alternatives. We can do nothing, or somebody can move a motion. Somebody might want to move some other motion. Councillor Valescu?
Look, I'm happy just to move a motion that we cease the program. That looks like it's the will of the council. I would like to know why something like this, such a great opportunity, wasn't taken up more, which is a shame. I don't have any concerns about millionaires' daughters getting this because I think it's our conditions that have actually excluded people from taking part, rightly or wrongly, and the conditions that Hyper have as well. So that's all I'd like to know, and I don't want to see a report coming back. I think this has sort of done its dash, unfortunately, within the city.
Is that seconded? Crossland, did you wish to speak? Is there anyone speaking in opposition to that motion? Councillor Hull.
Councillor Versky is a bit presumptive that we don't have an appetite for this. I think what is missing is, once again, as repeating myself tonight, is that the administration hasn't really taken us along for the ride with this. They haven't provided us with the information that we asked right from the very beginning. That our concerns about the equity factor, the means testing, I asked personally about that. And there was assurances that, yeah, everything's okay, then tonight I can't put my hand on my heart and tell you that. Well, I think the alternative motion, if this motion fails, Mr. Mayor, would give this staff the opportunity to finally actually take elected members seriously about this and provide them with timely and accurate information that we want, and give this program another opportunity. In other words, in June, we actually reconsider the program and give the administration a couple of months to actually get some reassurances about concerns that we had right from the outset to actually equip us to actually put our hand up or not. So that would be my position. If this motion fails, that would be the position I would put forward.
Anyone else speaking in favour of the motion? Then I'll ask Councillor Valescu, was it, to close the debate?
Look, I think there was some... I think essentially what council wanted was that it didn't go to people that didn't deserve it, and one of those aspects would have been the financial capability. I think when we talk about means testing, it is quite a strict process, and perhaps I got the feeling that the people in Hyper weren't comfortable with that, even though the checks that they would do would sign off on those very concerns about those that aren't financially disadvantaged. And that's actually in the motion, to support financially challenged and socially isolated people in our community to drive. So essentially, the motion itself has a means test component in it. But look, I think it is a lot of money, and I think the fact that it didn't work, it was a huge opportunity and people didn't grab it, and you know, it's not our money, it's the ratepayers' money. So I think we've tried it, and other councils may wish to extend it, and there'll be the opportunities for people there.
All those in favour of, just to be clear, ceasing it as at 30th of June, raise your hand. All those against, the motion's carried. Thank you. We'll move on to next item, which is the walking and cycling guidelines. Now, this is a peculiar one. I was on leave when it was discussed at a forum, and I have some serious concerns about the content. I haven't had an opportunity to express that in any council forum. If you're, I suppose what I would prefer to do is, if somebody was willing to move a suspension of standing orders, there are a few points that we could have a group discussion on. On the other hand, if nobody's minded to do that, then I'll just keep my counsel and move Councillor Valescu to suspend standing orders. Second to Councillor Pfeiffer. All those in favour? It's carried unanimously. Right, well, I'll kick off then. Now, it's sort of easier just to go straight to some specific sort of points that I picked up. So page 149 of your agenda, which is page 77 of the consultant report that's been prepared, there's a little box that has design considerations, and there are a few dot points there. Now, the one that I completely agree with is ensure bike lanes continue at intersections and do not disappear. In principle, I like the sound of that, but I'm very aware of the practical problem that you often have little islands for pedestrian lights or signs, and that's the reason that bike lanes come to an end. There are ways around it, but in some places it's difficult. So to ensure that that happens is perhaps too strong a language. The advanced bicycle stop lanes, where you have maybe the green covering on the road and so on, look, again, I would say they're nice, but to have that in your design considerations to say that's what should be provided, I'm building up a bit of a pattern here that this report is giving you virtually world's best practice, and I don't believe it's necessary. As someone who cycles probably about 80k's to 100k's a week through Marion, I just don't think it's necessary. Provide separated bicycle lanes. Separated bicycle lanes. So that's where you have the roadway, a cement barrier. That's how I understand it anyway. And then the bike lane as part of the road, but exclusively for bikes. Again, through most of Marion, even the slightly busier routes through Marion, like along George Dwyer or Finnis Street or something, I would say that's not necessary. The degree of traffic apart from peak hour really just doesn't justify it. And the green surface treatments, avoiding vehicle slip lanes to improve safety. Well, there are, you know, slip lanes are there for a reason. So I just find, as a cyclist myself, I find this so totally bicycle dominant. Even the way it uses the language of car dominant thinking, I don't think it provides an appropriate balance. So I want to open this up for discussion. Just use that page for a starter. But are other people thinking the same way? I mean, all of these things at expense, and I'm saying that they're not strictly necessary, but what do others think? Councillor Hull?
Mr. Mayor, I'll get to the points that you made in a minute, but what I'd like to say about this is that it's a shame we're even having this discussion about on-road bikeways, because we begged and pleaded with DipTy to set aside enough rail corridor for us to actually put the bikeway within, and suggested to them quite specifically not to put signalling infrastructure and cabling infrastructure in the way.
Councillor Holt, that's the Tonsley bikeway specifically you're talking about.
That's right.
Fair enough.
So it's unfortunate we're even having this discussion about the merits of everything you're saying about on the road.
The points I'm talking about are design principles for the whole city.
Right. Well, unfortunately, I'm going to have to be in disagreement with you again, because the bikeways, the dedicated bikeways, are the rare opportunity where cyclists might find some safety in a car-dominated world. And if we actually don't apply the very things that you oppose, Mr. Mayor, then everywhere will be car-dominant. There'll be no safe haven for bicycles. That's what this is all about. I rode a bike for a long time as well, and I always thought that the the critical time when you need a bikeway is at the very intersections, when they actually evaporate. That's when you're the most vulnerable. That's when you're the most vulnerable. And that's why the City of Adelaide have actually put all of those treatments in place to ensure that bicycles actually have an opportunity for some safety and refuge from cars. Right, so just so happens I'm opposed to you, so my time is limited. So essentially, I'm not happy with your proposal, Mr. Mayor, that the bikeways, we should actually be thinking even bigger than this, that we should be thinking about bike commuter ways, where the cars are actually even less of a relevance, that bicycles can be used much quicker to get from the suburbs into the city and vice versa. The fact that you had to get off your bike at the Mike Turner bikeway and go through chicanes is ridiculous for a commuter bikeway. So I have a very different view, and my view is one of the same as the bicycle user groups in Adelaide. I just think that what's proposed in the report is very, very appropriate, and as you know, I have concerns about the so-called school times that DIPTI impose, where the bike lanes are not there of an evening when the kids are trying to ride their bike home. They're home by the time the bikeways kick in. It doesn't make any sense. In the morning, it's fine, but in the afternoon, there's no bikeway coverage at all.
Thank you, Your Worship. Look, I think I escape the middle ground here in the sense that I am a cyclist as well, mainly recreational cyclist as opposed to commuter, and it is pretty terrifying out there sometimes. Look, I think with these design considerations, I think, you know, that first one that you refer to, you know, ensure bike lanes continue at intersections and do not disappear. It's more about the intent. I think we should seek to ensure, possibly, but it's the intent that, you know, that's what we should be that's what we should be striving towards. Not that that's what we should deliver at every single intersection in the city of Marion. It's more that that's, you know, that it's a desirable intent to strive towards. So I think it's probably, from my perspective at least, more of a wording issue than an absolute there. Also, look, I've got a few comments on the Tonsley Greenway, which is the double barrel part of this motion. Is now the time to speak to it or come back to it? Because I do have a couple of little issues with that as well. I think if we just specify that that's the intent as opposed to the absolute, then we'd solve a lot of issues.
Thank you, Your Worship. Yeah, I do agree with Councillor Pfeiffer that I believe that when you see something that it says considerations, that's the way I see it. Design considerations, is you think about these things. Probably where we've got a bit of a mismatch there is that when you go down to the next line, it says ensure bike lanes. So instead of it becoming a consideration, it's got then a contra wording to make it sound tougher. Whereas I think we were all seeing it previously at the elected members forum is that these are design considerations. It's not necessary that everyone will be at that level, but they could be at different levels leading up to that. So, sorry. Yes, the wording there is probably a bit contra from one to the other. So,
thank you, Your Worship. Yes, I share your concerns about over-engineering, particularly through the Edwardstown-Ascot Park area. I think that a separate bike track wasn't needed. There's some quiet streets through there. And I've also ridden to work at various periods, and the thing that struck me is that how few people actually ride to work when there's such a great facility along the train line. It's so easy, and I think we've got to move away from this idea that if we spend more and more money on bike paths, people are going to ride. A lot of people just don't want to ride, and no matter what you do, they're not going to. So perhaps we need to let people know what's already there. But I just think over-engineering everything won't make people ultimately want to ride when it's hot or when it's wet or just because of the effort.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of sense being spoken by almost everybody here, because there's the big one that perhaps hasn't been mentioned, and that is the budget. And what worries me most is that if we over allow for safety, which sounds a bit of a ridiculous statement, but if we do go over the top in that area, we may end up short-sheeting ourselves and our residents and visitors with not enough facility at large. So there's a fine line between what we can afford to do per kilometre and how many kilometres we can afford to do overall. And having said that, I do see the need, though, to take into account the fact that we will have in the not-too-distant future things such as self-drive cars to consider, and we therefore need to look beyond today into tomorrow to in order to work out what we would like to have, albeit we can't possibly ensure it at every turn. So I see it as a matter of balances, and I would like to see more moderate description of where we're going with it, having regard for those things, budget, practicalities, but also on the other side of the coin, where the world is going in transport and what will be the future needs to ensure that our cyclists are reasonably safe. They're not going to ever be entirely safe.
Thank you, Your Worship. Yeah, look, my thoughts are very similar to what's been said already, particularly Councillor Pfeiffer. The words, if they are interpreted as they're virtually you must have these in your design, are very poor words to have. A lot of the points that you've picked up, Your Worship, are the most expensive options, and ultimately, that might actually stop a bikeway being actually built because it's just going to be so expensive to engineer those options in. So although some of the options are lovely and they're the gold-plated, really nice-looking bike lanes, I think they should be options only. And then at least when we do decide to build a bikeway, we can look at the budget and decide what options we add in and don't add in at that time, rather than be really constrained by this policy.
Yeah, I'm another one who definitely sits in the Pfeiffer and Crossland camp about having a... I mean, yeah, we can have the gold-plated option. If we have an intersection that's really key, that we really want to make a statement with, or we have some safety issues with, yeah, okay, we can look at that, but that's definitely not the norm. I'd also like to draw everyone's attention to page 141, just quickly. I'm I'm really keen on that. I'm really keen on the aspirational nature of that plan. It really does put out, I guess, a view to the community of what we would like to do as a council. And I like the fact that there is a number of those aspirational paths going to schools and going to shops and going to other things that are maybe not on our current cycling ways. And I think that's important. I think it's a really good way forwards. And I think if we have a plan like this and we ratify a plan like this, that we can just knock it off a piece at a time. I think it's a really good bit of work.
Options is we could bring it to a future forum for feedback, or we could revise it and send it out for circulation and bring it straight back to a council. It's up to what members wish to do.
Thank you. I suppose where we're heading with it is that there were really two components to the recommendations from staff. One was about endorsing the guidelines. The other was specifically about Tonsley Greenway. So when we come to move a motion, somebody might want to move with the guidelines as is and the Tonsley, or you could just move the Tonsley if there, as Ms Dixon suggests, that some more work could be done. The other, just a couple of others I was going to quickly mention, seating every 300 metres on key routes. Now, I found that strange in the context where we're debating whether to have a park bench in every reserve, and yet to have one every 300 metres on every bicycle route, that sounds like a recipe for expense to me. There's purchase of a street sweeper, or rather a bike path sweeper specifically for bike paths, and although I can completely appreciate the advantages, even in the worst patch of bike path in the whole of the city of Marion, and Councillor Pfeiffer would well know it, Pinecone Alley, next to the railway station, Dipti, we gratefully accepted Dipti constructing a bike path as part of the Merino to the city bikeway, but to put it under a row of pine trees rather ignored the fact that pine trees drop pine cones. So you do have to dodge the pine cones as you go through, but you can manage. And in fact, the street next to it, which is a quiet, well-constructed bitumen surface, is perfectly adequate. And I reckon about half the commuters use that instead of the brand new bikeway anyway. But I don't want to go on and on. People have had a good chance to have their say, so let's get into a formal motion. So looking back at page 67, that will help you, whether people want to move recommendations 1 to 4 as printed, or just 3 and 4 as printed, and then we can discuss the Tonsley Greenway. It is up to you. Councillor Velasco?
I'm happy to do 3 and 4 at this point and revisit 1 and 2 later on.
Please proceed.
That's all, Your Worship.
Is that seconded? Councillor Hull?
Just to reiterate my concern, seeing this is now Tonsley Greenway specific, how Dipti let us down big time. I have spoken before about this, but now this is the official occasion to do that. But correct me if I'm wrong, Mr Mayor, when we met with Dipti about the electrification of the Tonsley line, and our desire to put significant money into the Greenway, we almost pleaded with them not to put any infrastructure in the way. They went ahead and did that and ignored us and created a $1.3 million obstacle. In other words, it would cost us $1.3 million to move that infrastructure, to allow the greenway to go through. You know, this is a greenway that is of as much significance to the state of South Australia and the Tonsley project, the South Australian government, as it is to us. And yet they just ignored us, and because of convenience and lack of consideration, just did what they wanted to do. And I really think that this should be conveyed back to DipTie, that the relevance of their actions, that our disquiet. If somebody could convey that back to them, that would be great, because they also let our community down as well. It's limited us to do the best possible option for them with the Tonsley Greenway, which, you know, it's serious money we're putting towards it. And the whole idea was that it would allow commuting by those students from Tonsley to actually, and Tonsley, and even Flinders University, to actually go into student accommodation in town or whatever. It's very, very disappointing. And it's also forced us to move a lot of our infrastructure onto our roadways. Because the ideal situation with commuter bicycle paths is for it to be separated from cars. So it's very unfortunate and very disappointing, and I'm here to tell anybody that's prepared to listen how really pissed off I am about it. So we should provide in principle support for what's left of the Tonsley Greenway, what we can do with it. I'd like to thank the staff, Rudy, who would have worked on this. I'm assuming he's unhappy. Because he's a great advocate. He always was a great advocate, not only with this project, but with the project going on up here behind us at, what's it called, Darlington Project. He was a great advocate with that, making sure that bicycle considerations were embedded in the infrastructure considerations right from the outset. This didn't happen with the Tonsley Greenway.
Well, Councillor Hull, you and I would probably agree that Department of Transport have probably got the worst record for community engagement of any public department, state or federal, in my experience, has been so for a number of years. Councillor Pfeiffer.
Thank you, Your Worship. Look, I'm prepared to put my in principle support towards this as the motion states. However, it is very much in principle, and I really, really don't like the northern section of the Tonsley proposal. Now, we had previously looked at putting that northern section on the eastern side of the rail as opposed to the western side. However, putting it on the western side makes a lot of sense because it goes past Hamilton College. I think that's quite a smart idea. But then dropping it back over to the other side again and sending it down Charles Street and Adelaide Terrace, I don't think is great. Adelaide Terrace particularly, it is a really, really narrow road. It has car parking on it at the moment on both sides. And similarly, Adelaide Terrace, it's the other side of the rail from Railway Terrace. If we've got a bike track, a brand new freshly minted bike track on Railway Terrace, and we're putting an on-street one on Adelaide Terrace, you know, 20 metres away, it just doesn't make much sense. I think what I'd like to see, and what I hope, you know, in providing this in principle support, I hope the staff will look to see whether we can get the Tonsley to connect up with the Merino Rocks Adelaide Green Bikeway a little bit earlier on, around about where Dawes Road is. So if you go to page 173 and you look at the northern section of that alignment, when you get to Dawes Road, it's now heading east to go down Charles Street and Adelaide Terrace. Why can't we get to Dawes Road and head west for 100 metres and then send it down the actual Railway Terrace bikeway, just so that it connects up earlier on? It's a much safer route. You're then on the off-street route, and it saves us the silliness of having a bike track on both sides of the railway line. Thank you.
Yeah, and saving expense too, really. You're saving that extra route, and it does seem to make sense.
Furthermore, also, you can then connect up to the pedestrian crossing
as well, so it's a safer route to get across.
On Dawes Road, on about Dawes 50, Road. 100 metres up from...
Yeah, 100 metres up from where we're sending it the other direction.
Can we have a specific staff comment on that? Because if we're about to... You know, I'm just concerned about how our in-principle support might be taken if, in fact, there's a significant caveat about the route. Dr. Grimm will come up.
Through the chair, the alignment segments 2 and 1 was primarily to provide a more direct link rather than going backwards, I suppose, to a certain extent further west. However, obviously we could consider the connection through to Dawes Road and the crossover at that location.
Well, Dr. Grimm, if we were to adopt the motion as printed, which is in principle support subject to the Hamilton business being worked out, wouldn't that cause a difficulty? Wouldn't it be, in a sense, approving the route that's set out on in Appendix 2, page 173, which has the Charles Street option? I mean, wouldn't you feel bound to keep going with Charles Street despite the discussion?
Through the chair, the motion refers to Dawes Road to Celtic Avenue as the component, which is section 3 or segment 3.
So it does segment anyway. Right. Okay. So was that going to be coming back? Oh, I see a future report would come back to deal with that as well. All right. Well, in that case, it can just be taken as valuable feedback and it doesn't need to hold us up tonight. So that's good. And just a respectful comment to staff that possibly this whole report should have been two different reports dealing with a specific project and general design guidelines. But anyway, we've got through it. Now, we've had the motion moved and seconded. Anyone speaking against? Well, no, you really should not. No. We're dragging things on too much, I'm afraid. If there are no further speakers, I'll close the debate. All right. There was no speaker against. I'll simply call for a vote. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, carried by majority. Thank you. So let's move on. Thanks, Dr. Grimm. Let's move on to the next item. Another good news item. South Bank Tennis Club. Councillor Westwood to move.
If I ever find it, I'd like to move the motion as is, I believe.
Yes. Did you wish to speak?
Yes. I'm sure the club would greatly look forward to being able to use their tennis courts in safety and looking more welcoming than they have in the past or up till now. It is unfortunate that the under soil or substrate, whatever it's called, is not suitable, and we will need to, I believe, rectify that fault, even though it's not exactly a council fault as such. And I do believe also, by the way, I will have to make an amendment when I find the motion, and that is that because the work is involving very much the basics of the structure, I believe that we shouldn't be advising the club that any overrun is there up to them to meet, because I think it's very much a council structure and we should make sure that it's right for any lessees.
So Councillor Westwood, just to help you out here,
yes,
page 177 is a report. You would be happy with the first three recommended motions, but you would leave off the fourth one about advising the club that they're responsible for cost overruns. I think that's your intent. Right. Is that right?
Yes, I think I'm coming to the motion. Yes, that is right. I don't want them to be lumbered with any possibility of any overrun, because it's such a basic rectification of a structure that really belongs to us, and it's really up to us to fix that up. Yes, that's right. So number four I would like to leave off, quite right. Thank you. Yep.
All right, is that second? Councillor Byram, a question? Yes?
If I could ask a question of staff on that point four. That is a standard clause that we normally put into all sporting infrastructure and all clubs.
Ms Dixon?
Through the chair, yes, it is a standard clause, and if there was significant, cost overruns, we would bring that back to council and work through a solution towards that. Really, the intent is to be clear with the clubs that council has signed off on the scope and the budget, and to get all parties working towards that.
So, Councillor Byram?
No, I'm not seconding it.
Right. Well, is anyone seconding Councillor Westwood's motion? Councillor Kerry, did you wish to speak?
I think it's fairly straightforward. I think that it's general maintenance. We're the landlord, I guess, and I think it's fairly straightforward. I don't think we should impose on the South Bank Tennis Court any extra overheads. I think it's a fair and reasonable position.
So, anyone speaking in opposition or moving an amendment? Councillor Appleby.
Thank you, Your Worship. I'd like to move an amendment and insert point four.
I could see that insertion coming. Did you wish to speak further? Is there a seconder for the amendment? Councillor Byram, and this is your opportunity to speak in the debate.
Thank you, Your Worship. I do support what Councillor Westwood said about the club, but I do believe we leave that clause in because we have that with all clubs. We don't treat one differently to the others. Thank you.
I'll put the amendment without further debate. All those in favour of including the clause 4, raise your hand. All those against including that, raise your hand. That is carried, so the motion is amended and we have clauses 1, 2, 3 and 4 before us. Anyone who hasn't spoken may yet speak. Councillor Valescu.
Look, I'm open to the idea if there is a slight increase in costs that come back to council, and we strongly consider supporting that, but I think we do need to go through that process, especially have that in the motion and judge each case on a case-by-case basis. So I don't think we're being mean to the clubs, but I think, you know, given the extent of some of the works that we do, and also some of the works can actually have quite a significant unknown factor, I think it's important that we're prudent in how we approach it.
That was in favour of the motion as amended. Is anyone speaking against the motion as amended? Then it's back to you, Councillor Westwood, for final remarks.
Thank you. It's a democratic process. I'm happy enough for that fourth part to be included because the majority wish it to be. I'm very pleased that no one has actually objected to the main part of the motion, and I look forward to that club being enjoying renovated courts. Thanks.
All those in favour of the motion as amended, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. Page 181, dog registration fees. Well, we're about halfway through the meeting, so I expect this will carry us through for the next hour and a half. Dog registration fees. Councillor Hull to move.
Yeah, to move it, Mr Mayor. We are still substantially lower in our new fees than any of the other councils in the report. Hang on. Now, Salisbury, well, that's current, so their proposal might be higher, but all the others were below.
Dog-friendly city, let's face it.
Yeah, that's right. But in the report, it's picky, I know, but it talks about a former government department. DUNA doesn't exist anymore. It's now due, so maybe that could be corrected. I think, in closing, this shouldn't really warrant much discussion, but in closing, I think it's a shame we don't have a similar cat registration considerations as well, Mr Mayor, as some councils do. But I recommend the motion to the council.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a couple actually. Firstly, why aren't we doing this as part of the budget?
Mr. Mifsud usually takes budget questions.
Through the chair, the fees and charges schedule underpins the budget. So by default, the fees and charges schedule will come through one of the final versions of the draft budget, which is a matter of course.
Okay. Secondly, look, I mean, we say on page 181 that costs associated with the management and administration of dogs continues to rise. However, when you read through this report, with the exception of a very small percentage increase to Dog and Cat Management Board, it looks like pretty much all the other costs are dropping. So why are we raising our registration fees? And please, let's not say to be in line with everyone else, because that's not a reason. If we can deliver the service cheaper, we should deliver it cheaper.
As we currently are, but it's a good question. Mr. Catanar. Mr. Catanar. Very appropriate.
I won't add anything to that. Through the chair, yes, it's true that we will realise some cost savings in terms of the introduction of the DACO system. There will be that peak period through the year-round dog registration time where it will be less labour-intensive for staff. However, while there will be some savings, there is always going to be an increase in costs associated with other materials, so advertising materials, signage, and other dog-related materials or purchases or staff wage increases, etc. So it's not just the savings that will be realised through the implementation of DACO. There's increasing costs ongoing. I think in terms of being conservative, putting it up by CPI rather than going up to the maximum of 100 or falling into line with some of our other councils, I think that's a pretty reasonable option.
Now, a seconder? Question, Councillor Crossan.
Thank you, Your Worship. I noticed on previous years that we were at one time in line with other councils, and obviously we've managed to keep our costs down, but also it was presented in our spreadsheet where the reductions were as a percentage of our fee. So a dog registration fee was, say, $70, and then the discount was a percentage of that fee. We seem to have gone away as well from that, which seemed like an easier way of calculating all those other things rather than having them as separate. I wondered why we'd done that.
Mr. Gatner.
Through the chair, just to make sure I understand the question correctly, so I think you're referring to, I haven't got the page numbering on what I have, but the table which sets out the fees. Page number 184. Is that the table you're talking about, where each of the fees are listed individually?
Yeah, before, when we've had this come to us in previous years, or at least definitely the one I looked at, it was some of the discounts were as a percentage on the standard fee. So as the fee rose, the other items rose in line.
So in other words, we've just had more or less one or two fees and everything else cascaded from that.
That's correct. Whereas the way this motion's written, you'd have to individually change.
Right. Mr. Scull has a contribution.
Thank you, Your Worship. My understanding is that 50% fee for a standard dog, so a standard dog is desexed and microchipped, still is 50%. And the increased cost of is going to increase because more dogs will be classed as standard dog after the 1st of July, when all dogs have to be microchipped and desexed. But in answer to your question, it's still 50%.
Yeah, and that's it's just that was easier because then if we look at that and the associated cost, we could say instead of the 50% discount, we'll drop that to a 40%. And I think that particular year we used to give 75% discount to greyhounds, and we scrapped that discount completely. So it was just an easier way of maybe looking at making slight changes.
All right. I just have one question for staff. In the proposed recommendations, and the suggestion that fees go up to be annually indexed, should we not say, in brackets, to the nearest dollar, or rounded up to the nearest dollar? Mr. Kattner?
Through his worship, I think that's a good recommendation to add.
Would you be happy with that as the mover, Councillor Hull?
Yes, if you're the seconder, Mr. Mayor, I'd be terrific.
Well, I won't be the seconder. I'm just the facilitator around here.
Oh, right.
But I just want to avoid an argument when somebody says, I'm only going to pay $17.56 because that's what CPI says, instead of $18. I just want to have us make the decision we intend to make. Although we seem a long way off that yet. But are you happy for those words to be included?
Absolutely. Thank you.
And motion is varied. That's right, by leave of the council. Beautiful.
Noted that we actually agreed on something, Mr. Mayor.
I was not. Well, we agreed about DIPTI as well. And rounded up to the nearest dollar. And that could be repeated in that number 9 as well. Well, at the moment, number 9. Yep, fix that later. Right, do we have a seconder? Councillor Valescu, thank you.
I've just got a question. What would be the decrease in projected income if we got rid of the non-standard dogs?
What do you mean? Shot them?
Well, we've got 71% of dogs that are standard, which is mean dissexed and microchipped. So we'd assume we'd have close to 100% after the legislation, which means that we'd no longer be getting 29% at the highest rate. So there's actually a decrease in income.
To clarify, you mean getting rid of the category, not getting
category.
Rid of the dogs?
No, of course not. No. No, Pete,
okay.
No.
Thank you.
Don't misquote me, please.
Mr. Kattner?
Through his worship, I guess under the new legislation, all new dogs will need to be microchipped and desexed. So, yes, there will be an upward curve in terms of the number of standard dog registrations, but it can be a little bit difficult to predict, but the costings we've put in have been based on past year's number of dogs registered as standard and non-standard dogs, also taking into account any concessions that apply.
I guess we're probably raising it for CPI in the end may not actually cover the expenses because we won't be getting in as much money on it.
Mr. Scull?
Thank you, Your Worship. You're correct. If people comply with the new legislation and desex and microchip their dog, then we'll go up from the 71% of standard dogs who've had those procedures to, well, you would assume 100%, otherwise that people face fines. So income will drop in that extra 29%.
Thank you, Your Worship. I didn't expect to have to be asking this question tonight, and it was a resident raised this with me today, and they were upset and angry. And it's about ruling coming in that dogs have to be desexed and microchipped. She had no problem with the microchipping. She has a female dog that is 14, no longer can have pups, and wants to know why she's being forced to have to see about her dog being desexed at 14 when she can no longer have any more pups. And she was very, very upset and angry over that.
Through his worship, It's only for new dogs, so dogs born after 1st of July that would need to be desexed. Any existing dogs or living dogs wouldn't need to be desexed from the 1st of July, so that dog could continue being with all its pieces intact.
A further question to that then, the public are not getting that message. They are hearing that all dogs have to be desexed and microchipped from the 1st of July. So somehow that message is getting misinterpreted.
So can we make that plain in our messaging? I'm sure there'll be a lot of publicity coming from council about this, that existing dogs can keep their parts intact. I think that's an important message. Now, I'm not going to make any more jokes about categories. do we have a seconder for the motion? Councillor Valescu. Thank you. Are you speaking any further? Anyone against the motion? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Oh, sorry, against? It's carried by majority. Thank you. So we move on to page 186, the tree management framework. Anyone like to move accordingly? It's a fantastic initiative. Why don't you do both, Councillor Gard?
Put my sound on. In the absence of a forum that unfortunately fell off the tree, as it were, would it be possible to have a bit of pre-discussion on this subject before we go to a motion with respect?
You can always move to suspend standing orders if you wish.
Could I so move?
Yes. Is that seconded? Councillor Westwood seconds that. So very well. Did you want to kick things off, Councillor Gard? All those in favour of suspending standing orders, please raise your hand. All those against, it's carried by majority. So we are free to speak flexibly. Councillor Gard, what did you want to have to say about all this?
Well, I certainly would like to move the motion, but beforehand, I am a little concerned, as I have relayed to management, that we do need to address the issue of equity and fairness and quantifications of the tree plantings, and I'm really referring more to street plantings than reserve plantings. In fact, I'm not speaking exclusively, I think, about the street plantings. There have been many thousands of trees planted throughout the city of Marion to date. Very few in my particular end of my ward. And when you look at it a different way, you can say, well, we know that it's a very expensive project, $300 a tree, and therefore there is certainly some imbalance as far as payments are concerned from resident area to resident area.
Councillor Gard, can I just pause you there? Can we get a response from staff straight away on the equity and fairness issue in terms of street tree planting? Thanks.
Through the chair, councillors, a couple of things to pick up. Firstly, it is still coming to a forum. I think there's a lot of pressure on forum nights, and I think the latest I saw was a July forum or something like that. But it's more for information about telling you how we run trees and the policy and maintenance and planning regimes, and I'm looking forward to that night, and I suspect you will be too. As far as equity, it is a clear outcome as one of the actions of the tree management framework to look at equity through our suburbs. One of the initiatives for next financial year, so that will be 18-19, will be doing an assessment of tree stock and also the current status of trees in all of the streets and where we should be prioritising ourselves. I understand that you might have had some discussion during ward briefings about this coming winter, and I know that we've done some work that shows that Marino as a suburb is clearly underplanted, and I've seen that work and I agree with that work, and we have committed to do increased planting in Marino this year because it is underplanted. So as part of the framework, it's clearly an initiative that we'll be looking at equity in our planting and bringing back future work, and I'd be looking to update you in July about that.
Thank you. Well, if I may go forward and move that motion.
Well,
we're in general discussion.
You wanted a more general discussion, so I'll invite... There.
Got a little bit ahead of myself.
He wouldn't be the only one with secret aspirations to do that. But does anyone else want to use this opportunity to ask Mr. Lyons any questions, make some general points, etc.? Councillor Valescu.
Yeah, look, I'm just wondering why Park Holm isn't included in the appendix of, and I don't know if other suburbs aren't included, appendix 1 and 2. which has the list of suggested street tree species lists, pages 215 and I would suspect 219. Has that just been missed out? Just be added in if it's just a simple omission, that'd be fine.
Minister Sheldrick's coming forward to help with that one. Great suburb, Park Holme. We don't want to leave it out. Two 16, that's been located. Oh, yes, page 216, fourth one down, it is there. Sometimes hard to see on the iPad, I must admit. Well, would someone else like to go ahead while Councillor Lescu's going on with that? Councillor Pfeiffer?
Yeah, just a couple of questions, and these ones are admittedly down in the weeds, so to speak. When you're looking through the appendix now, unfortunately I do have a little bit of botany knowledge, not a lot, but a little bit. There's a couple of species in there that just look really odd and out of place. One of which in the reserves section of the appendix is the Canary Island pine. It seems really weird that we'd be planting, and that is a true pine tree. It's not like the beautiful pines we get along the shorefront down at the beach. It is a true pine tree, the Canary Island pine. So it seems weird that we'd be wanting to plant pine trees.
Well, I must say they're doing very well next to the Edwardstown Station.
It appears throughout, but 216 Canary Island pine is on. And similarly, my only other species type question here is we're actually, when we're jumping into the street tree section, we're talking specifically about a specific genus and species of flowering pear, the chanticleer, as opposed to just saying pyrus species, because there's about five or six different common pyrus, Manchurian pear being one of them, common pyrus species that we use in the city. So it seems weird to dictate that we only use that one as opposed to using the full suite of them that we typically use now.
Some of these things are more marketing terms, aren't they? But I don't know. Mr. Sheldrick, can you help us?
Through the chair. So the Pinus canariensis, Canary Island pine, was taken from some of the character trees that are growing around the city at the moment. There's a few adjacent to the outdoor swimming centre. And as the mayor said earlier, some near the train station also. So it's a choice, I suppose, that was added there in terms of keeping with character, some of the existing character within the reserves. Okay. So the pear tree. The Chanticleer has been listed separately because some of the pear species that we had used previously, the Eucerienses, which was one of them, has been found to have have significant structural issues. So we've moved away from using that. We also use a capital pear, which has quite a smaller canopy, and so it doesn't provide that larger area of shade that we could bring.
And we wouldn't plant Manchurian anymore.
No, the Manchurian is there in Syriensis.
Right, thank you. Other questions, Councillor Carey?
Of the 2.5 million, where is it coming from? Is it coming from the general budget or the which year through the Vinnie might be able to answer that question.
Yes, Mr. Minister.
Through the Chair, it's part of our general revenue.
Other questions? Let's get all the questions out of the way. Thanks. Councillor Gard again.
Yeah, seeing we're still under those standing orders, I just wanted to ask a general question about numbers through the Chair in relation to species, and there are some, I'm not sure percentages, that haven't taken. In other words, they would be counted as existing plantings and they may be in the got it in the bag already column, but if they haven't taken and they need to be replaced, is there an approach to that in terms of the budget and planning?
Mr. Lyons.
Councillor, through the Chair, Councillor, I think the best way to look at that is we are actually undertaking phase two of our open space metrics at the moment. You'll recall that we've completed phase one, which dealt with four of our services in open space. Tree planting is one of the remaining four or five in phase two, and we will specifically be answering that question. We'll be doing assessment of species, and David advises that as we go through that, we'll be able to get you a better feedback on that question.
Councillor Crossland.
Yeah, two questions, Your Worship. The first is, I know it's on the community feedback at the end of the report, and also it's been highlighted to me by a number of community members. Will this actual tree planting in reserves also tackle the weedy species that we've got in our reserves at the same time? Because there's no point planting in some of the reserves while you've got big Aleppos and things like that, which is just going to kill everything off.
Mr. Sheldrick.
Through the Chair, the some of the actions within the trees in reserves section of the tree management framework talk about tackling the weed species, some of the weed species within the reserves throughout council.
So is that likely to be a staged approach so that we can maintain the amenity?
Through the Chair, that'd be an approach based on collecting data of where those issues are and where they're of greater concern, and so that program would roll out in priority of greater concern where those weed problems are.
So just to confirm, that is part of this project and this funding?
Yes.
And the second question, Your Worship, if I may, is I thought it was the question Councillor Gard was asking, but obviously not. Where we've had trees planted already during this program, so recently in Hallett Cove, I know there's some streets with trees planted, quite a number, and there may be one or two that have failed. Are those failed trees going to be replaced? Because otherwise we're going to have the same problem that we get maturing trees and then gaps with little trees in rather than try and get all the trees to grow at the same time.
Through the Chair, that's something that we'd definitely be looking at, is keeping an eye on those streets that we have planted throughout the program and coming back and replacing trees that may not have taken or that have been vandalised along the time.
So that's something that staff will be doing. I don't have to get residents to put in a custom request for every failed tree.
I can't guarantee that we'll be looking at every street, so if there was, you know, if customers come across that, then please encourage them to do that.
Councillor Valescu.
Look, one of the comments and an issue that's come up previously is the box, Queensland box tree. Is it possible not to actually have that in our street trees and just to leave it in our reserves? just because of the nuts, and it does actually, what they've written here in the feedback, but I've seen it in Myrtlebank, it actually does lift the pavement a lot more than some of the other species. So I don't know if there's any reason that I'm not aware of that it needs to be kept in. I wouldn't mind some info on that.
Mr. Sheldrick.
Through the chair, it's, as you would know, a species that we have quite a lot of around the council, and initial investigation in terms of the breakdown of our tree population indicates that it's a species that we don't necessarily want to plant too many more of. However, it's also a species that we're still planting to infill streets that already have mature Queensland box in them.
My question is, can we get away with not planting new ones? Just because of the gum nuts, they're like bullets, and even when they get in lawnmowers and stuff, they can be quite problematic. And keeping them for the reserves, where the gum nuts will be pressed into the softer ground and it's not so much of an issue. Would that be a problem? I don't think we should remove them, the ones that we've got, until the arborist says we have to or there's a safety issue. But is it possible to actually stop planting them?
Through the chair, I think it's fair to say that we're not introducing that particular species into new street plantings, but only in filling. From a staff point of view, we haven't had a lot of feedback from the community about that particular species and its potential to cause issue with lifting pavements or the nut issue. So,
thank you, Mr. Sheldrick, for your really good customer service today in helping a resident on a tree issue. I just thought I'd say that. Thank you.
Councillor Hull?
Business and move a motion.
Well, you don't have to move it. The chair can just say that we're resuming formal proceedings, but I just want to make sure no one else has any other informal remarks to make. Councillor Pryor.
Yeah, just a quick one. I think something that needs a bit of explanation maybe for me is the substitution of areas of the council which are not covered by this plan going forward. So, for example, if we've got a street which has a whole heap of trees in it, which are of a certain variety that are, so let's say it's a tree we're not putting forward on the management plan going forwards, and yet there's one or two of those that go down that need replacing, what's our position going to be there? Are we going to replace it with the newer trees that we think we're going to put in there in the future? Are we going to leave that area, or are we going to replace those with trees that match the current streetscape? Do we ever thought about that, or is that something we haven't thought about yet?
Through the chair, I think the sensible approach in that situation would be to choose a tree that provides similar character and similar amenity to the street, where we wouldn't be planting the dominant species in that street.
Okay, and so as a follow-up question, have we sort of got a map of the city with kind of where we want these things to go in the future? So, for example, if we had a street of jacarandas, we kind of go, okay, yeah, we want to maintain that sort of area. We might do another one over here that's got jacarandas on as well. So we have sort of some sort of layout in our heads, or is it kind of just making it up as we go along?
Mr. Sheldrick.
Through the chair, so we are approaching that in the first year with our streetscape or street scope, where we go through and identify where those existing avenues are and what kind of quality and what kind of condition they're in, and then making a determination of whether we stick with that species or whether it's a suitable street to apply a different species. Yeah, so and from that would obviously generate a good map of where we are in the city in terms of what species we're using.
I guess, is there any means for us in the future to influence the tree species that we're planting? I mean, I'd like to know whether we have a rollout and then we maybe reflect on this in 12 months' time and go, actually, we probably want this species added to this list. Or is this just going to be something which we set and forget?
Through the chair, I believe it's something that's quite fluid and can change over time. As we get to know any of the new species that we're using, or and definitely some of the species we're already using.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Hull.
If it's okay, I'd move the recommendation.
No, Councillor Gard was first in line there, so
oh.
if there's no one else who has an informal comment or question, there'll be no more questions once we get into formal proceedings.
With Councillor Gard's permission, could I second it?
That'll be the Chair's discretion. Councillor Gard, standing orders are resumed. Do you wish to move the motion?
I do indeed, Your Worship. I think a lot of has been said about the merits of this project, and perhaps not as much about the merits of the work done towards it, and I do apologise if over the year or two of the project coming up to speed that I've given people pretty hard times, but I feel that the professionalism that has gone into this project has set us up for some brilliant stuff over the next few years. I've looked very, very closely at the configurations in a broader sense, albeit we're not yet aware of the suburb-to-suburb configurations, but to me everything tallies. I think where we need to catch up, we are allocating realistically. There seems to me to be a very good master plan to get our canopy up to par with those neighbouring municipalities. That is a very sound strategy. And then standing back and looking at it as a whole, this is all about livability or the livable city as we explain it. It's also about the environment. It's about what we want how we want people to live in the future, out of their cars, on footpaths, instead of on roads, as much as possible. Safety for the young, safety for the aged, in otherwise very harsh environments, which are only going to get harsher, we believe. So all in all, this is one of the great projects, I believe, of the City of Marion, and it's easy to say that in advance, but I'm very confident that in 5 to 10 years' time and beyond, that this city will look back at the project and say, well, this has been an enormous investment with an enormous return at every level that I can think of, but most importantly at the human level. So I really commend the motion and again congratulate staff for their fantastic work. Yep.
Thank you, Councillor Hull, to second the motion.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, this is more than the great words of Councillor Gard. It is a climate change adaptation project as well. And my thoughts about street trees have shifted. Back in the days of Gordon Sykes, I had many a discussion with Gordon about having native trees, biodiversity in our streets. And that's still fine, but what's in my face now and is what's challenging local government is providing shade. Our streets are getting hotter. We've got heat mapping now. We know what the current situation is, which presumably will worsen. The challenge that we have now is to make our streets cooler. And having street trees that can create a canopy. Now, it's not an easy job for our staff because street trees are problematic. They drop, Councillor Lescu made a good point about the nuts they drop. Years ago, I remember being involved in removing a heap of lily pilly trees because at certain times of the year, people's washing would be purple from bird droppings. And the streets would be purple. You'd walk through the streets. They don't work. Then you've got invasive root systems. In fact, on the opposite side of my street, on Diagonal Road, you'll notice there is no street trees, for good reason, because of all the underground services. You cannot have street trees in some spots. It's not easy. But the big challenge is our $2.5 million investment is making sure the trees thrive. We saw the debacle of the Seaford Line plantings with diptyque, where three quarters at least of those plantings died. Three quarters of a multi-million dollar planting died. Well, I don't want to see that happen in our streets. Our ratepayers don't want to see their investment die. We need to make sure they're watered. I had assurances today during our ward briefing that that would happen. I hope so. The other thing is we need to put tree protectors around the trees so our vandals don't find it as easy as they have in the past to simply snap them off. I remember one particular tree planting. We lost 33 street trees in one night. 33. Just through wanton vandalism. Those cages that we put around them are a good investment. Doesn't stop all the problems, but it actually stops the drunks, if you like, from just breaking them off as they're walking home. So we need to actually value our investment, look after them. In the changing climate, we need to make sure they are watered and protected. Mayor Lewis made the point once that street trees are actually going to have a bigger challenge than they've ever had before to survive. It's a very good point. And it's worsening. So I'm happy to support this. It's something that will progress for the next 3 years, well into the next council term, and I'm looking forward to it unravelling right across the city with great equity for the whole city.
Anyone speaking against the motion? I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. It's carried. All those against, carried by majority. Thank you.